Hello, everyone, and welcome to our very first episode of Unearthed. Aoife, Sinead, how are y'all today?
I'm doing good, Becca. Thank you. How are you?
I can't complain. It's been pretty sunny here in Galway, but I'm sure in an hour or so it will start hailing in traditional Irish weather.
Yeah, pretty cold, though, right?
Being from Florida, like, I don't know how you Irish people do it. Like, I literally cuddle a hot water bottle 24 hours of the day.
Perpetually cold. Always.
Always. But that being said, it's a great day to reconstruct a life story. And so the life story we're telling today is that of Gladys Bentley, a revolutionary gender-bending jazz singer who lived in the first half of the 20th century. She's very cool. She is known for singing raunchy songs. And if you know me, you know I love a bit of a raunchy song laced with double entendre.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that type of music. I don't know if I'm a jazz fan in particular. I think Gladys Bentley might be a little mad at me in that regard. But she used to sing like decked out in a tuxedo and a top hat. And she would sing songs about like just the most provocative things because she didn't care at all what people thought of her. Had you guys ever heard of Gladys Bentley before recording this?
Oh, I have not.
No, I haven't heard of her, but I really will be. I'm looking forward to hearing more about her.
Yeah, so that's pretty common. A lot of people haven't heard of Gladys Bentley, which is really shocking to me because she was such a like revolutionary figure in the 1920s. She was born in 1907 to a working class family in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Go Phillies. Her father was African American and her mother was an immigrant from Trinidad. And it was a rough childhood, to say the least, unfortunately. Gladys would steal her brother's clothes at the age of 10 because she felt more comfortable in them than dresses and skirts. She knew from a very young age that she was attracted to women and even shared that she had feelings for her female teacher. She also publicly stated later on in life that she didn't feel like her body represented who she was. And to me, now in the 21st century, this very much sounds like gender dysphoria. And I wonder if she'd had that language and that medical treatment at the time, if she would have identified as a trans man, perhaps. Right. Obviously, we can't know exactly, but it's definitely something to think about since she says that she didn't feel comfortable in her own body. So anyway, her parents took her to the doctor, tragically, to quote unquote, cure her and make her what they deemed a real woman. Because apparently you can't be a real woman unless you're straight, which I was unaware of. And most doctors at the time, they viewed same-sex love as something pathological. So something that could be cured with medicine, something that could be treated biologically. And understandably, as a response to this, Gladys ran away from home at 16, saying later in life that some decide to take the reins of their destiny into their own hands. That is the way I reacted to being an unwanted child. Oh, gosh, the sadness. She ran away at 16 to Harlem, New York, the epicenter of the Harlem Renaissance at the time. At 16, what were y'all doing at 16? Because I was watching Jersey Shore and being stressed out about what prom dress I was going to buy.
16, I was very naive, very, very into school. Very, like, I had a very kind of straightforward life, you know, very simple. So I can't even imagine, you know, being in that position. I just seems worlds away from me at 16.
I think that it's a really critical time being kind of, you know, emerging into young adulthood, and sounds like she had so much going on. And
wait, what were you into at 16, Aoife? Because
I don't really know. Like, I don't really... I was kind of like really active in the student council and stuff like that, but yeah. I don't know, maybe I was just saying like, yeah, hanging out. At 16, I just was enjoyed hanging out with my friends and, you know, was a bit oblivious to kind of, yeah, just enjoyed hanging out with my friends and having a good time.
I definitely see young people now and I'm just so impressed with them, because at 16, like, I just felt very innocent. I don't think I had like a grasp on, you know, what was going on outside of my, you know, community. So I definitely am so impressed by the youth today, because I certainly didn't have too many crazy experiences by then.
Yeah, I would completely agree. And to like your point, Aoife, like struggling to even remember what you were doing at 16.
Yeah.
That was an entirely different version of yourself, you know? So like, I don't know what I was doing at 16. I will disagree with you a bit, Sinead, that I didn't think I was naive. I thought I knew everything. Mm-hmm. You know, right. I thought I was ready to take on the world. I had my little boyfriend. I thought I was hot stuff. Oh, yeah, I was crazy. But knowing what I know now. Good Irish girl. Knowing what
I know. Maybe I was 20. I was 22. And then I think I had my wild 16 phase when I was 22, 23. So I was very much a late bloomer for sure.
Knowing what I know now, I do feel like 16 is just such a young age, right? You don't know what you're doing. You're still going through puberty. And so for Gladys Bentley to move to Harlem, New York at the age of 16, being a queer Black woman,
it's wild.
Oh, the strength that takes, I just can't believe it. And at the time, Harlem was very much like a central site for queer African Americans. You got to remember, this is the time of the Great Migration. And so African Americans are coming from all over the states, especially the South, in very large numbers to urban areas. Gladys Bentley shows up in Harlem, applies for a job at a nightclub that was originally looking for a male piano player. But in typical Gladys fashion, she insists that this was the perfect time for them to hire a woman, forces her way into the nightclub, and is offered the job on the spot because she performs without even asking permission, and the entire club applauds. So she was a brave lady, a lot braver than I think maybe some of us might have been at 16. But the power that Harlem held at that time is not only because of this Great Migration and the Harlem Renaissance, but also we have to remember this is the time of Prohibition in the United States. Mm-hmm. Are y'all familiar with what Prohibition was?
Yeah.
I'm not fully sure.
No drink, right?
Yeah, so basically I feel like when you think of Prohibition, obviously it's prohibiting something. So in the United States between 1920 and 1933, you cannot sell alcohol, you cannot consume it, you couldn't transport it. And I feel like even Americans don't realize how long this was. This was 13 years without having legal access to alcohol. Dang. Yeah, but this actually led to an uptick in nightlife, shockingly, because there were several like speakeasies formed and people were gathering in secret to drink and have fun. You know that kind of idea where if something's forbidden, you just want it more?
Yeah.
Well, this is very applicable to Prohibition. This is why there's like the Roaring Twenties, because people are just going wild, going anywhere they can find alcohol. And so this all contributes to like a very fun nightlife scene. And I was just thinking the entire time I was researching this, how something like Prohibition would go over in Ireland. For example, as many people know, currently in Ireland we have one of the strictest lockdowns in response to COVID-19. Yeah. And as an American, I'm very happy to be safe from COVID, but I also couldn't help but wonder how other Americans would react to such a strict lockdown. I think there would be protesting and rioting. And now on the flip side, if we're talking about Prohibition, I wonder how Irish people would respond to that. I imagine there'd be a very similar response of protesting and rioting.
Oh, for sure. And I think, I wonder, you've mentioned COVID, like I wonder, you know, if we'll be able to look back in a few years on what the patterns, you know, what patterns will emerge, you know, because, you know, socializing was prohibited, you know, at this time, right now, currently. So I think people have been speculating that it will be similar to the Roaring Twenties after COVID.
It was interesting as well, the way the off licenses stayed open and were considered essential, whereas, you know, a lot of young mothers couldn't get shoes for their children and clothes for their children, for their newborns and everything. So it's kind of interesting reflecting on that.
Definitely. I think with the culture of alcohol and pub culture in Ireland, I think an era like Prohibition would not go over well. And it didn't go over well in the States, obviously, because Gladys Bentley is living in this wild and party-filled time. And I guess depending on who you're asking, you could say that means it was going very well, because it's a fun social life. They're attracting like queer audiences in this like underworld nightclub scene. And one of her favorite locales to perform at was the Hansberry Clam House in Manhattan. And she would sing these songs about male exploitation and domestic abuse. So not only do we have this cross-dressing Black lesbian, the trifecta of discrimination in the United States at the time, but she is also performing songs calling out patriarchy and gender-based violence. This woman was fearless. I mean, she didn't care at all what people thought about her physical appearance or her artistry. She was going to speak her piece and didn't care what others thought about it. And that's why what happens later on in her life is really heartbreaking. So basically what happens to Gladys Bentley, and it hurts me to tell this, but it's a part of her story. So beyond the world of show business, Bentley faced a lot of criticism. It was a really hard time to be a queer Black woman in the United States. You have to remember that this is during the Jim Crow era, where there's a great fear of like upward mobility of Black people. And Gladys Bentley is seen as such a deviant figure, not only by white people and racists, but also by many people in the African American community that feared that because she was of this like deviant nature in her sexuality, that she would be a threat to the uplifting of Black people as a whole. And so they viewed her sexuality as an aberration, and there was a lot of backlash for that. And so she was isolated even within her own community. And so in the mid-1930s, Bentley falls on really hard times. The Depression is hit. It's greatly impacted the nightlife world and post-prohibition. And this is a bit shocking in my eyes. So when alcohol becomes legal again, they actually regulate nightclubs and bars far more greatly. And there's special concern placed on bar spaces viewed as disorderly. And that was essentially a code word for spaces that were largely gay or Black. And so in 1937, Gladys actually leaves Harlem, her home, and moves to Los Angeles, California, where you might think that things get better, but they do not. She faced many challenges to her desire to perform in men's clothing. California actually had anti-cross-dressing laws at the time that they'd had for decades to keep entertainment good and clean, as they called it. So if anything, things get much worse for Gladys in California than they were in Harlem, and she was often banned from performing at all. And then in the early 1950s, Bentley changes her public image entirely. And this is super, super heartbreaking. She adapts her image to suit public norms in order to make a living. And this is post-World War II era. It's a time of increasing pressure to conform to gender roles and increasing conservative attitudes. Not only is this the time of the Red Scare, where people are very scared of socialism and communism, but it's also referred to as a time of the Lavender Scare, where people are afraid of any so-called deviant sexuality. And this actually comes to a head because the U.S. government fires hundreds of their employees who they thought were to be gay. And so it was a very scary time to be gay, particularly a gay Black woman. And this leads Gladys Bentley to publish an infamous article in the Ebony magazine. And can you guys guess at all what she writes? It's pretty heartbreaking.
No, I'm so sad already. This breaks my heart because it's not super far removed from situations today, you know, like I wish we could say that we're at a point where people didn't feel like they had to conform, but, you know, it's not the case for many people. It's just, it's scary.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think the same. I think that even today, many people have to kind of conform or can't be their true selves. And that's really one of the sad realities, I think.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And that's why like the end of Gladys Bentley's life story is so heartbreaking, because she lived so out and proud for a long time, breaking all these norms, and just the culmination of Jim Crow, post-World War II, Red Scare, Lavender Scare just kind of forces her to conform in this last like less than a decade of her life, because she does die fairly young. And so to get back to the article, the title of it is I Am a Woman Again, which already is a bit problematic, because she was always, you know, she always claimed herself to be a woman. So this idea that she's a woman again, and she briefly wasn't for a while, is a little heartbreaking. And she writes in the article, for many years, I inhabited that half shadow, no man's land, which exists between the boundaries of the two sexes. Today, I am a woman again through the miracle of modern medicine, living a normal existence. No. Yep. And she goes on to say that she got treated by a doctor to receive hormone treatments, and she marries a man. And she says she's like reclaimed her womanhood. And she literally did this as an effort to get employed, because she's living at the poverty level at this point. No one will employ her. And so she kind of has to conform to these societal norms. It's awful. And that pressure and increasingly discriminatory times just made her feel like she had to tell this tale of respectability to protect her legacy and her ability to work. And it's one of those things where you can't blame a person in this situation. No, you know, you can't be angry at her for doing this. And I will say, if you read the article a bit more closely, because it's very lengthy, she does call for like an understanding and tolerance of people who are kind of between these two sexes. And there are a few lines where she even says like, no one understands us and others exploit us. And so it's kind of this weird line where she doesn't seem to be condemning her past self, but rather explaining the struggles of living that life and why she's chosen now to live a different one. Mm-hmm. It's a very loaded article, and a lot of people debate exactly the message that she's trying to get across, but we really don't learn much more because she dies shortly after the age of 52. And when she passes away, she was studying to become a Baptist minister, which is just a crazy little snippet for everything that we know about this crazy gender-bending jazz performer. At the end of her life, she's trying to become a minister. And so it's just very, very bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, to me, yeah, it just sounds like someone's attempt at survival, really, and how she can survive the best she can. It's extremely sad to hear, you know. And I think, you know, hopefully, I like to think that maybe if her time was situated in these times, a lot more language now, a lot more understanding of, you know, gender. So I hope that maybe if she lived today, that she would have not had to conform in such ways and maybe have felt more comfortable in her own gender identity and her own sexuality. So it is really sad.
Yeah. And I even think as well, like the online community is such an important one for people who might not conform or might not have a community so close to them in terms of location or living. And I think it has really opened up a space for more open discussions and for people to really more be their true selves. Obviously, it's really important to have spaces offline as well as online, but I suppose the beauty of something being online is that it's there 24/7 and you can access it at any point.
Yeah, definitely. And the saddest part of Gladys Bentley's story is that originally her narrative and her accomplishments are very erased from history because she is this Black queer woman. And then in the 2000s, and you know, modern day, when there's this effort to like bring back these stories and bring their attention to the public, she's still erased because of this ending article where she kind of goes into these conforming norms. And so even though she was one of the top most successful Black entertainers of the 1920s, no one talks about her. She was effectively erased from history books, first because she was so scandalous, and then because she was too heteronormative per se in the article. And so I hope that by recording this podcast episode, I hope her story will be told more widely and commonly. And it's a heartbreaking tale of life as a queer Black woman. And I think it sheds a lot of light on the oppressive institutions of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it's an important and an urgent, you know, life story to tell. And thank you, Becca. I know I hadn't heard of Gladys before, and I'm glad I do now. But it is like you did touch on an important point, how like maybe like of ownership, how like she may not be owned by certain communities because of maybe the latter part of her life story. Mm-hmm. And I just think it is very important to unpack, and the whys and the hows and things like that. So I think it's just desperately important to talk about. It is very sad. I am left with like a sore place in my heart, you know, for Gladys.
I agree, Sinead. I hadn't known of Gladys' story before now, but yeah, it's quite sad in the end, but I think it's important that the different communities, you know, embrace the person that she was throughout her whole life, and hopefully her story will be told. And I'm really glad that Rebecca has picked Gladys as one of her people to focus on, because I suppose enjoyed learning a little bit more about her today. And I know some information you sent on to me earlier was included a quote which I actually thought was really poignant. And you said that GLaDOS said that the resistance has always been in my blood and spirit since I was born. And it really made me reflect about, I suppose, activism and the real, like, who we are and our call and our drive for activism and the importance of it, and that it is sort of a spirit and a drive, I do believe, as well, in terms of my own activism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And Aoife, I'm so glad that you brought up that quote, because I think when we discuss resistance and activism today, I think a lot of people view it as, you know, actively protesting or writing articles or calling your representatives. But a lot of people forget, and this is particularly pertinent in Gladys Bentley's life, is resistance can just be being. Resistance can just be living. Resistance can just be performing music because that's what you love to do, even if you're not accepted in the spaces that you're doing it in. And so on that note, I'll end this episode with the words of the infamous Gladys Bentley. I have violated the accepted code of morals, but the world applauded my piano playing and song styling. Even though people bitterly condemned my personal way of living, they still could appreciate my artistry as a performer.